takes a plane ticket. It doesn't. Missions takes feet and sometimes knuckles. Hey, neighbor, or even a fingertip. Hey, what you doing tonight for dinner? Missions is really easy. It's just where are we called to do it? Most of us in here are probably called to do it in Bismarck. That's okay. Just don't forget that first part. We're called to do it. It's worth pointing out. Today, we are going to be in Philippians again, or still. We'll be in Philippians for a while, so I'm just going to stop saying that. But we're going to start reading in verse 12 of chapter 1. Now, I want to give you a little more reminder, a little background. If you've been following along, you know this. Paul is in prison. He has been taken to prison in Caesar's, by his sort of his household, essentially, those closest to Caesar have imprisoned Paul for preaching Christ, which is essentially treason. When the apostles said, and we read this all over the New Testament, Jesus is Lord, it was a treasonous statement. It was like saying, you know, Donald Trump is not my president. Frankly, I mean, you know, it's an opposition toward the one in power. Now, Caesar had a lot more power because he ruled much more strongly than anyone can rule in America, but it was treason that Paul was in prison for. And as we're going to read here in a minute, people in Paul's absence are preaching the gospel out of selfish ambition. They are seeking their own advancement. Now, what does that mean? Maybe some were preaching the gospel to sort of stir people up, to get people excited about the gospel, which would cause Paul more trouble. He's in prison, and all these people out here talking about Jesus, and that's all going to come back down on the guy that's in prison for talking about Jesus. So that might be part of it. Some of them, maybe just for income, right? Paul was being taken care of. Certainly, well, that might be the very beginnings of people preaching simply for an economic opportunity. It's happened since as well. But they were preaching Christ selfishly. And so that's the situation that we read about here. So I'm going to read it, kind of get a hint, taste of what's going on. We'll talk a little about it. Paul says, I want, and by the way, I'm going to stop. We're actually going to read verses 12 through 18a. You don't see the A's and B's. But sometimes the verses, the way these are split up, they were done several hundred years after that was written down. And sometimes I think they got it wrong. So we're only going to read the first half of verse 18. Second half for next week. It says, I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me, being imprisoned, has really served to advance the gospel, so that it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. And most of the brothers, having become confident in the Lord by my imprisonment, are much more bold to speak the word without fear. Some indeed preach Christ from envy and rivalry, but others from goodwill. The latter do it out of love, knowing that I am put here for the defense of the gospel. The former proclaim Christ out of selfish ambition, not sincerely, but thinking to afflict me in my imprisonment. What then? Only that in every way, whether in pretense or in truth, Christ is proclaimed, and in that I rejoice. We'll see next week, I think. Yeah, and I will rejoice, leads to another thought. But he is rejoicing. He is happy. He is thrilled that the gospel is spreading. And how is it spreading? First of all, it's spreading through some sincere people who genuinely believe it and want people to believe it. But the other two ways it's spreading here is his imprisonment, his own suffering, and I put in my notes, meanies, right? People who are mean, people who are out maybe just for their own, this selfish ambition. As I thought about that, it started to occur to me that I am willing to bet that about 98% of our interaction in our culture with one another, maybe even here, maybe at home, maybe at work, is essentially centered around what we could call selfish ambition. Now, it sounds awful. Come on, we're not that bad. But think about it. Most of what we do when we interact with the world often comes down to what can I get out of it? Or how can I protect myself from it? Right? It's about right here. And so we do things, not mean things, not cruel things, just looking out for us. I was talking to somebody the other day about jobs and future. What do I want to do? And struggling a little bit because this is the message. This is the message of our society. You gotta get a good job so you can have good money and earn a good income, right? That's what it's all about. And this person says, that's not what I'm about. I want to be happy. I can relate to that. It's true, you've got to eat, right? You got to have stuff. But think about it. Most of us, when we enter into our vocations, our careers, our part-time jobs, whatever we do, we're going first and foremost so that we can get something out of it, right? We want security and we want stuff. We want to get something. I always think of that 1981 Loverboy song. Everybody's working for the weekend. Because we just got to get there and then we can have fun. But think about the economy of God's kingdom for a minute. The way God set it up, we are here to serve others. What if when we enter into our vocations or our occupations or our part-time jobs or whatever we do with our time, what if first of all we thought, how can I give something to you? How can I make that better? You know, the photographer who is primarily concerned about making memories and creating art, the accountant who brings clarity to other people's checkbooks, health professionals bringing health and wellness and a better life to people, counselors who bring understanding and help us understand all the things that are going on in here and why we act the way we do, businessmen bring order and productivity to the world around them. These things are important. This is the biblical order. This is the design, the way it was set from the beginning, is that God put man and woman here and he said, go, finish what I started. Sometimes we have this misconception that the whole world was perfect once upon a time. It wasn't. That's not what the Bible says. The garden was. And he put them in the garden, and then he said, go and fill and subdue the earth. The earth was unsubdued. Humanity was called to bring order and structure and beauty and art and culture and music and all of these things, right? We were created to give. And, of course, the fall happened. And Adam and Eve made the choice to distrust God and to refuse to believe him and to look out for themselves. And now that's kind of what we do. We look out for ourselves. We're separated from each other and from our own design. We're separated from what God has called us to do. The common phrase, you got to look out for number one, I think reveals the height from which we have fallen. Because that's never the way it was intended to be. This is why I think probably the biggest part of Jesus' ministry is calling us back to our original creation. He says, you know, take up your cross and follow me. He says, don't seek to be a leader, seek to be a servant. He says, he who loses his life will find it. Jesus keeps calling us back over and over. Deny yourself and serve. Choose death so that you can live. The way of Jesus is the way of laying down the things that we want for the sake of others and for the sake of the world. Now, I think it is fair to say that Paul not only preaches that, but demonstrates it in this very passage. He says that his suffering has advanced the gospel, and that causes him joy. He is rejoicing. He's thrilled. He's thrilled. Rejoice in his suffering because it is serving to advance the gospel. This guy is chained up, probably literally in a Roman prison, not the nicest of places to be, right? He's stuck here, and he doesn't, we know from this letter and from other letters, he doesn't know whether he's going to live or die. He's facing this limbo of existence. And yet, he's thrilled about it. Why? Well, he mentions the Imperial Guard. The Roman Imperial Guard is like Caesar's secret service. These are the people closest to Caesar. And Caesar is probably the number one agent against the gospel. Like, the biggest opposition we have is Caesar. And they're like, come on in and hang out with us. So all of these people, Paul says, are hearing the gospel. The gospel's being advanced. How else could I get into the Roman Imperial Guard? They take me prisoner. Yay! That's his attitude. His suffering leads to the advance of the gospel. See, now this is interesting because it's intended by Caesar and the devil too to be a discouragement, right? Your suffering will make you, oh, well, that's too hard. Okay, I'll stop all this Jesus talk, right? That's what they want out of it. That's what Caesar wants. That's what the devil wants. And it is a common tactic, a very common tactic of the devil, that if you are suffering, then you'll just shut up. That if life is hard, you'll become discouraged and you'll stop all of this Jesus nonsense. But it doesn't always work that way. Let's think about some people, maybe in history, that have had suffering and turned it in the other direction. One is Fanny Crosby. Some of you might know that name. Fanny Crosby was a hymn writer. She's credited with over 9,000 hymns. One of them is Blessed Assurance. We still sing that one sometimes. There are others that probably are familiar to some of you. She was 6 weeks old, and she got sick. Traveling quack. Back in the 1800s, they had these guys who would go around with snake oil and wagons. You've seen that on The Wizard of Oz, right? This guy comes by, she's sick, and he puts some kind of potion on her eyes, which is supposed to heal her. She eventually did recover from the sickness, but it blinded her. 6 weeks old, she was blinded. She was raised by her mother and her Christian grandmother, who helped her to memorize the whole Bible. At the age of 8, Fanny Crosby wrote these words. 8 years old, she wrote this. Oh, what a happy soul I am, although I cannot see. I am resolved that in this world contented I will be. How many blessings I enjoy that other people don't. To weep and sigh because I'm blind, I cannot and I won't. And it was her suffering that allowed her to know Jesus better. And ultimately, her suffering pointed back to his glory. Many of her songs talk about seeing and the one day that she knew she would finally see would be to look upon his face. And she looked forward to that. Another one is John Bunyan. You might know him. He spent 12 years in prison, same reason as Paul, preaching the gospel. And in prison, he began his most famous of all books, Pilgrim's Progress, along with many others that would point back to the glory of Jesus and would point others to Jesus. Think about us. What are the things that we suffer through, that we struggle with? Maybe it's like Paul. Maybe you feel like you're in prison because you're in a job you hate. And maybe God has you there because it's the only way to reach your coworkers. Paul rejoiced to be chained up in a Roman prison so that he can share the gospel with the people who were around him. And in fact, I think it's through suffering that we connect most deeply to the heart and life of Jesus. Just a week and a half ago, I saw the movie Silence. I'm not going to stop talking about it. Go see it. It's phenomenal. It is very difficult. It is hard to watch. You will leave and you will have some questions. I did. I still do. I'm not quite sure I've figured it all out. But the suffering is so intense. And the one thing I think I've figured out about the message of the movie is that we are not here to be heroes. We are here to enter into suffering and know that Jesus will be there with us in it. He suffered for us, and he suffers with us still. And it's in our suffering that he is revealed, truth be told. Now, this does not mean that he wants us to suffer. We need to be real clear about that. It means we will suffer. It means pain is an inevitable part of life in a post-fall world. Suffering is a reality. It's just going to happen. Now we have two choices. We can insulate ourselves from it as much as possible. We can protect ourselves. We can pretend it doesn't happen, whatever works to insulate ourselves. Or we can accept that that is what it means to live in a cursed world as fallen human beings, and that suffering is going to happen, and then we can bow before it, and we can tell our stories to one another. Let Jesus work through that. Think of Dave Dravecki, the Major League Baseball player. He's a pitcher, left-handed pitcher, played for the Padres and the Giants, and actually beat the Cards once, but still a good story. But he got cancer in his arm. Story is that at one point he had been treated and they thought he was over it, and then he was pitching again. He'd come back and in the middle of a pitch on the mound, his arm broke, and it was so loud they said you could hear the sound throughout the stadium. And eventually, in order to save his life, doctors took his whole arm off. You know, this boy, right? This man who had grown up a boy, I mean, major league pitcher, right? Is that not the highest, right? What boy doesn't want to grow up and be a major league baseball player? Be awesome. He had accomplished it. He had it. Not just the job, but the fame and the money and everything that goes with being a major league baseball player. And all of a sudden, he lost his whole arm. Lost everything. Everything was right here for him. That's where it all was, gone. And he went around speaking and writing books after that, pointing back and saying, you know, it's not about me, it's not about my arm. It's about the Jesus who called me to be his. And that's enough for me. And through his suffering, he was able to point to another, to point to Jesus. Suffering is reality. We have two options. We can act as though our safety and security are the most important things to us. Right? That's the first thing we can do. We can pretend like we are the most important thing. And then we probably won't talk about suffering too much, because that might make other people, we don't want to make other people feel uncomfortable. Let's be honest. It does sometimes. I think they just need to deal with that. We don't want to talk about it. It might make us feel vulnerable, too. It might make us look like we don't have it all together. God forbid, right? Because we need to look like we have it all together. We don't want to look like people who hurt. And so we find ways of coping silently. We bottle up the pain. We use substances, or we overwork ourselves to immerse ourselves in something else, something, anything that can make us look like we're doing great on the outside, while inside we're withering away and turning to dust. That's one option. If we're the most important thing, that's the right way to do it. The second is that we realize that life involves suffering for all of us, and that Jesus has entered into that with us. And if that's the case, then we can talk about it. We can talk about our pain, even if we don't really know how to, or we don't have the words. We can be honest. Now, let me just side note, if you're ever fortunate enough, blessed enough, to be invited into that, Don't be a hero. Don't try to make the pain go away. Don't try to come up with all the right catchphrases that'll be just, okay, good, we can all move on now. That's not what they want. If you've ever hurt, you know, you want people to be with you who will just be with you. That's okay. Be there. And then sometime, maybe in the middle of it, maybe after it, after the worst of it, you can tell your story. And your story of suffering will point, not to you, but to the one who was there in it with you. The story of Job does that. It is in the midst of Job's most traumatic pain, who does he see? Finally, God. God uses suffering to reveal himself to us. And Paul sees his suffering as something to rejoice in, because it not only reveals Jesus to him, but to the world as well. Now, I know this idea can be difficult. I know we struggle with this. This is why very few Christians will actually go see the movie Silence. It doesn't have a happy ending. It is why most of the songs on Christian radio are happy songs. It's why Your Best Life Now will sell far more copies than Pilgrim's Progress, and nobody reads that one anymore. Because, after all, we want to pretend life is pretty. It's not. I think most people's biggest challenge with the gospel, and frankly, with the existence of God at all, is suffering. I can't tell you how many times I get that question. How can a good God allow this kind of pain to happen in the world? Well, it's like we talked about this last week. What you and I need is not comfortable life, is not safety and security and happiness. That is not what we need. What we need more than anything else is God. And it is in suffering, and some of you know this very well, it is in suffering that we get more of him. It's my own story. It is in suffering where I have gotten more of Jesus. Does that mean I want it? No. But in that I can rejoice. That it is in suffering for me, for you, for all of us, that he reveals himself. And it's in our stories, when we open our mouths and we stop being so bullheaded, that we can tell our stories of suffering to other people. And it is in that, thinking anybody's going to look at you and go, you are just amazing. If so, I'd say edit your story a little bit. Because the fact of the matter is, Jesus is the one who's amazing. He's the one that met you in it. He's the one that was there. He's the reason you're still breathing on the other side of it. We should hear those stories and go, wow, Jesus is amazing. See, stories, we love stories. That's why movies and books still make money, right? We love stories. But a good story has a tragedy or a struggle, right? Some kind of tension, and then it has a hero. But our stories are not so that we can be the heroes. Our stories are so he can be the hero. And it is for this reason that he wants us to share that. We have places, all of us, I think, have places in our own stories where Jesus has really showed up. The question we ask, the question I think Paul asks, is will we share that story to allow people, other people, to see the beauty and goodness of the one who met us in it? Or will we worry more about us? Is it us or is it Jesus? My hope is that we will see that what has happened to us has really served for the advancement of the gospel. That we might find Jesus so beautiful in our own stories that it becomes our passion, our heart, our desire to open our mouths and tell our stories so that he might be glorified. I'm going to ask the band to come up. We're going to turn to communion, the Lord's Supper, this meal. And a part of this idea,